And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Change is in the air. People are getting excited about making a better world. So when we talk about taking care of the Earth with its millions and millions of different species and its infinite stretches of wonder, this whole preservation theme may just have a real chance of happening. Today, we hear from the world's leading naturalist, the legendary E.O. Wilson, about a new project he's heading up to identify every species on Earth, and he invites you to help. And you may be surprised to hear what the U.S. government is doing to preserve our natural landscapes. That's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Today, you're going to get an update on the complexity of life on Earth from one of the world's leading naturalists, E.O. Wilson. This legendary biologist, who knows more about this than almost anyone else on Earth, has come to a time in his life when technology and wisdom converge to begin to create the definitive repository of record for every species on Earth. His call to action is rich with information, and he's going to be joining us during the weekly Earth Summit that begins in just a moment. In segment two, as the imprint of human existence spreads throughout the land, we hear a lot about the effects this is having on the diversity of life itself. But our natural landscapes are in decline as well. Where once we could experience the unbroken beauty of our open spaces, revel in the beauty of our great vistas, now even these are vanishing. In segment two, you may be surprised to know that the U.S. government has a program to protect our natural landscape. We'll talk with Elena Daly of the National Landscape Conservation System. That's coming up, and of course, the Nature News Update as well. But now, it's time for the Weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and today we are fortunate to hear from one of the most prodigious authorities and prestigious voices of wonder, Dr. E.O. Wilson. Today he enriches us with an overview of the vast diversity of species on Earth and brings us up to date on the status of these creatures. In order to help understand life on Earth, Dr. Wilson is making a proposal to create the tools needed to inspire and record the preservation of life's biodiversity, the Encyclopedia of Life.
Please keep in mind that if we were to wipe out insects alone, just that group alone on this planet, which we are trying hard to do, the rest of life and humanity with it would mostly disappear from the land and within a few months. So how did I come to this particular position of advocacy? As a little boy, through my teenage years, I became increasingly fascinated by the diversity of life. I had a butterfly period, a snake period, a bird period, a fish period, a cave period, and finally, and definitively, an ant period. By my college years, I was a devoted myrmecologist, a specialist on the biology of ants, but my attention and research continued to make journeys across the great variety of life on Earth in general, including all that it means to us as a species, how little we understand it, and how pressing a danger that our activities has created for it. Out of that broader study has emerged a concern and an ambition crystallized in the wish that I'm about to make to you. My choice is the culmination of a lifetime commitment that began with growing up on the Gulf Coast of Alabama and the Florida Peninsula. As far back as I can remember, I was enchanted by the natural beauty of that region and the almost tropical exuberance of the plants and animals that grow there. One day when I was only 7 years old and fishing, I pulled a pinfish, they're called, with sharp dorsal spines, up too hard and fast, and I blinded myself in one eye. I later discovered I was also hard of hearing, possibly congenitally in the upper registers. So, in planning to be a professional naturalist, I never considered anything else in my entire life. I found that I was lousy at bird watching and couldn't track frog calls either. So I turned to the teeming small creatures that can be held between the thumb and forefinger. The little things that compose the foundation of our ecosystems, the little things, as I like to say, who run the world. In so doing, I reached a frontier of biology so strange, so rich, that it seemed as though it exists on another planet. In fact, we live on a mostly unexplored planet. The great majority of organisms on Earth remain unknown to science. In the last 30 years, thanks to explorations in remote parts of the world and advances in technology, biologists have, for example, added a full one-third of the known frog and other amphibian species to bring the current total to 5,400, and more continue to pour in. Two new kinds of whales have been discovered, along with two new antelopes, dozens of monkey species, and a new kind of elephant, and even a distinct kind of gorilla. At the extreme opposite end of the size scale is a class of marine bacteria, the prochlorococci. That will be on the final exam. Although discovered only in 1988, are now recognized as likely the most abundant organisms on Earth, and moreover responsible for a large part of the photosynthesis that occurs in the ocean. These bacteria were not uncovered sooner because they are also among the smallest of all Earth's organisms, so minute that they cannot be seen with conventional optical microscopy. Yet life in the sea may depend on these tiny creatures. These examples are just a first glimpse of our ignorance of life on this planet. Consider the fungi, including mushrooms, rust, molds, and many disease-causing organisms. 60,000 species are known to science, but more than 1.5 million have been estimated to exist. Consider the nematode roundworms, the most abundant of all animals. 4 out of 5 animals on Earth are nematode worms. If all solid material except nematode worms were to be eliminated, you could still see the ghostly outline of most of it in nematode worms. About 16,000 species of nematode worms have been discovered and diagnosed by scientists. There could be hundreds of thousands of them, even millions still unknown. This vast domain of hidden biodiversity is increased still further by the dark matter of the biological world. The bacteria which within just the last several years still were known from only about 6,000 species of bacteria worldwide. But that number of bacteria species to be found in 1 gram of soil, just a little handful of soil, in the 10 billion bacteria that would be there. It's been estimated that a single ton of soil, fertile soil, contains approximately 4 million species of bacteria, all unknown. So the question is, what are they all doing? The fact is, we don't know. We are living on a planet with a lot of activities with reference to the living environment done by faith and guess alone. Our lives depend upon these creatures. They are, to take an example close to home, there are over 500 species of bacteria now known, friendly bacteria living symbiotically in your mouth and throat, probably necessary to your health for holding off pathogenic bacteria. The viruses, those quasi-organisms, among which are the prophages, the gene weavers that promote the continued evolution and lives of the bacteria, are a virtually unknown frontier of modern biology, a world unto themselves. What constitutes a viral species is still unresolved, although they're obviously of enormous importance to us. But this much we can say, the variety of genes on the planet in viruses exceeds, or is likely to exceed, that and all of the rest of life combined. Nowadays, in addressing microbial biodiversity, scientists are like explorers in a rowboat launched onto the Pacific Ocean. But that is changing rapidly with the aid of new genomic technology. Already it is possible to sequence the entire genetic code of a bacterium in under 4 hours. Soon we will be in a position to go forth in the field with sequencers on our back to hunt bacteria in tiny crevices of the environment, of the habitat surface, in the way you go watching for birds with binoculars. What will we find as we map the living world, as finally we get this underway seriously? As we move past the relatively gigantic mammals, birds, frogs, and plants, to the more elusive insects and other small invertebrates, and then beyond, to the countless millions of organisms in the invisible living world that envelop and live within humanity. Already, what were thought to be bacteria for generations have been found to compose instead two great domains of microorganisms, the true bacteria and one-celled organisms, the archaea, which are closer than are the bacteria to the eukarya, the group that we belong to. Some serious biologists, and I count myself among them, have begun to wonder that among the enormous and still unknown diversity of microorganisms, one might, just might, find aliens among them, true aliens, stocks that arrive from outer space. They've had billions of years to do it. But especially during the earliest period of biological evolution on this planet, we do know that some bacterial species that have earthly origin are capable of almost unimaginable extremes of temperature and other harsh changes in environment, including hard radiation strong enough and maintained long enough to crack the Pyrex vessels around the growing population of bacteria. There may be a temptation to treat the biosphere holistically and the species that compose it as a great flux of entities hardly worth distinguishing one from the other. But each of these species, even the tiniest of the aforementioned prochlorococci, are masterpieces of evolution. Each has persisted for thousands to millions of years. Each is exquisitely adapted to the environment in which it lives, interlocked with other species to form the ecosystems upon which our own lives depend in ways we have not begun even to imagine. We will destroy these ecosystems and the species composing them at the peril of our own existence. And unfortunately, we are destroying them with ingenuity and ceaseless energy. My own epiphany as a conservationist came in 1953 while a Harvard graduate student searching for rare ants found in the mountain forest of Cuba. Ants that shine in the sunlight, metallic green or metallic blue according to species, and one species I discovered, metallic gold. I found my magical ants, but only after a tough climb into the mountains where the last of the native Cuban forest hung on, and were then, and still are, being cut back. I realized then that these species, and a large part of the other unique, marvelous animals and plants of that island, and this is true of practically every part of the world, which took millions of years to evolve, are in the process of disappearing forever, and so it is everywhere one looks. The human juggernaut is permanently eroding Earth's ancient biosphere by a combination of forces that can be summarized by the acronym HIPPO, the animal HIPPO. H is for habitat destruction, including climate change forced by greenhouse gases. I is for the invasive species like the ants, the fire ants, the zebra mussels, and brome grasses, and pathogenic bacteria and viruses that are flooding every country and at an exponential rate. That's the I. The P, the first one in HIPPO, is for pollution. The second is for continued population, human population expansion. And the final letter is O, is for over-harvesting, driving species into extinction by excessive hunting and fishing. The HIPPO juggernaut we have created, if unabated, is destined, according to the best estimates of ongoing biodiversity research, to reduce half of Earth's still surviving animal and plant species to extinction or critical endangerment by the end of the century. Human-forced climate change alone, again, if unabated, could eliminate a quarter of surviving species during the next five decades. What will we and all future generations lose if much of the living environment is thus degraded? Huge potential sources of scientific information yet to be gathered. Much of our environmental stability and new kinds of pharmaceuticals and new products of unimaginable strength and value, all thrown away. The loss will inflict a heavy price in wealth, security, and yes, spirituality for all time to come, because previous cataclysms of this kind, the last one that ended the age of dinosaurs, took normally 5 to 10 million years to repair. Sadly, our knowledge of biodiversity is so incomplete that we are at risk of losing a great deal of it before it is even discovered. For example, even in the United States, the 200,000 species known currently may be found to be only partial in coverage, is mostly unknown to us in basic biology. Only about 15% of the known species have been studied well enough to evaluate their status. Of the 15% evaluated, 20% are classified as in peril, that is, in danger of extinction. That's in the United States. We are, in short, flying blind into our environmental future. We urgently need to change this. We need to have the biosphere properly explored so that we can understand and competently manage it. We need to settle down before we wreck the planet, and we need that knowledge. This should be a big science project equivalent to the Human Genome Project. It should be thought of as a biological moonshot with a timetable. So this brings me to my wish for TEDsters and to anyone else around the world who hears this talk. I wish we will work together to help create the key tools that we need to inspire preservation of Earth's biodiversity, and let us call it the Encyclopedia of Life. What is the Encyclopedia of Life? A concept that has already taken hold and is beginning to spread and be looked at seriously. It is an encyclopedia that lives on the internet and is contributed to by thousands of scientists around the world. Amateurs can do it also. It has an indefinitely expandable page for each species. It makes all key information about life on Earth accessible to anyone on demand, anywhere in the world. I've written about this idea before, and I know there are people in this room who have expanded or expended significant effort on it in the past. But what excites me is that since I first put forward this particular idea in that form, science has advanced, technology has moved forward. Today, the practicalities of making such an encyclopedia, regardless of the magnitude of the information put into it, are within reach, have made reality within reach. Indeed, in the past year, a group of influential scientific institutions have begun mobilizing to realize this dream. I wish you would help them. Working together, we can make this real. The encyclopedia will quickly pay for itself in practical applications. It will address transcendent qualities in the human consciousness and sense of human need. It will transform the science of biology in ways of obvious benefit to humanity. And most of all, it can inspire a new generation of biologists to continue the quest that started for me personally 60 years ago, to search for life, to understand it, and finally, above all, to preserve it. That is my wish. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. E.O. Wilson. Take his words to heart, for a few on Earth have such a sense of the complexity of our biosphere. It is, as he makes so clear, a sphere of near-infinite complexity. And we live in an era when these truths will be revealed, recorded, and interpreted. This will become, to those who take the time to learn, one of the most fascinating quests in the history of the world. To learn more about this project, visit www.eol.org. And to hear more from some of the world's leading men and women of ideas and action, please visit www.ted.com, which made this speech possible. This is Sidney Wildsmith, inviting you to join us each week for the most important 15 minutes on Earth, here on the Weekly Earth Summit. And now, the Nature News Update. The Sea Shepherd conservation ship, the Steve Irwin, is preparing to return to the Southern Ocean's Whale Sanctuary following a harrowing confrontation in which two conservation seamen were held hostage on a Japanese ship. The two were released, with one sailor suffering minor injuries. The Steve Irwin's strategy in unofficial alliance with Greenpeace is to keep the Japanese fleet of 8 ships on the move, thus burning up their fuel without being able to hunt and catch whales. So far, the Japanese whaling fleet has burned up 2,000 tons of fuel without catching a single whale. The Steve Irwin is being tailed continuously by what Sea Shepherd Captain Paul Watson refers to as a mystery ship. The Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is in need of volunteers with mechanical, navigational, medical, seamanship, and cooking skills. To contact the organization, go to www.seashepherd.org. A plan to log the nation's largest national forest, the Songus National Forest in Alaska, has been proposed. The plan would open up 3.4 million of the 17 million acres to clear-cutting, road building, and development. Environmentalists plan to challenge the plan in the courts, while forest interests intend to do the same, but obviously for opposing reasons. The plan was drawn up with a promise to provide assistance to the ailing lumber industry in Alaska and bring revenues to the state. Lawsuits by environmental groups have attempted to move the site of the logging from remote and roadless areas to more accessible areas already served by roads. Animal conservationists have for years been developing captive breeding programs for endangered species. The programs ultimately release the animals into the wild in the hopes that they will integrate and become part of a viable wild population. However, recent studies have indicated that such programs have a minimal success rate, with an average of only 33% of released captive bred animals actually surviving. This raises questions about the current approach. The alternative, moving small numbers of captured animals to new locations, does provide a higher success rate. But this practice can be difficult when populations are already diminished. Death of captive-bred animals is usually due to being shot or killed, as they exhibit less fear of humans, a diminished ability to socialize and mate with wild populations, and a lack of viable skills for hunting and feeding. New strategies will include raising captive-bred animals in complete isolation from human interaction in large enclosures and providing only live prey animals to permit the animals to develop survival skills. Then, only young raised in this situation will be released. Besides oil and other metals, which are rising in price due to reduced availability, water joins them now in the commodities market, as water shortages in California are enticing farmers to opt out of food production and into water sales. Farmers in the San Joaquin Valley in particular, which rely on subsidized water pricing to maintain market viability, are beginning negotiations with water-strapped Los Angeles to purchase water allocated to them, receiving as much as 3 times the usual rate. These farmers will therefore leave their fields fallow. This in turn will have unspecified impacts on food prices, which will include rice, cantaloupe, and tomatoes around the Sacramento area. Much water throughout California comes from northern areas of the state and from the Colorado River. Recent court decisions restricting redistribution to protect an endangered fish species, as well as the record low levels available from the Colorado River, are hitting this area particularly hard. This is the worst drought condition in decades, with no real solution in sight. Meanwhile, water prices continue to soar, with subsidized rates of $30 to $60 per acre-foot bringing now $200 on the open market. Many complain the taxpayers are subsidizing the farmers and paying higher prices as well. Anyone with a simple solution is encouraged to contact the governor. Hundreds of thousands of crop seed varieties from Asia, Africa, Latin America, and the Middle East will be heading for a remote island in the Arctic Circle. Deep within a mountain, a seed repository has been established to serve humankind in case, for any reason, crop viability is threatened. The Svalbard Global Seed Repository, created by Norway as a service to the world and supported by the Global Crop Diversity Trust, will officially receive its first seeds on February 28th. In the years ahead, over 600,000 crop seed varieties will be collected in viable quantities and stored in this underground refrigerator. More than a seed repository, the Svalbard Vault is in fact a genetic bank. Recently, seeds collected by the Global Network were sent to Afghanistan and Iraq to help restore diminished production due to the massive wars that are disrupting the natural agricultural practices and thereby threatening native seed viability. The seed gene bank has special merit as the effects of global warming are beginning to be felt. Hurricanes can be especially destructive to seed crops, wiping out whole seasons of seed crop in a single event. Preserving the Earth's diversity is a new field of international cooperation. It will, in the years ahead, spawn a huge new area of jobs throughout the world. And that's the news. In just a moment, we look at what's being done to preserve what we look at, as we talk with Elena Daly of the National Landscape Conservation System when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
That you don't know what you've got till it's gone. It paid paradise, put up a parking lot. It took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.